Welcome to the Mindful Sobriety Podcast with your hosts, Jane and Amanda. I'm Jane, a licensed psychotherapist and alcohol-free retreat host.
And I'm Amanda, alcohol-free lifestyle coach and yoga instructor. We're so glad you're here.
All right, guys. Today we have Ren on the podcast. Ren and I grew up together in Allen, Texas. We lived on the same street. We met in strollers. Our moms were really good friends, and I think Ren and I met around 3 years old, and we're really close up until probably middle school, and we continued to talk after that, but we were inseparable for a very long time. So I'm super excited to have Ren on the podcast. I would love for you to get us started by just telling us a little bit about your childhood.
First of all, thank you for having me. Excited to be here. Well, most of my childhood memories started and ended with you, so nothing I can share that you wouldn't already know. But I was born to amazing parents and an amazing family, very close-knit. Went to Christian school and church, so basically church 6 days a week. It was a lot of fun, though, and we lived on an amazing neighborhood where we got to grow up with a lot of really good friends that we've stayed in contact with over the years, one of those being yourself. But yeah, I'd say my childhood was just like a lot of people's, probably, you know, where you have a mom and a dad that are truly invested in you, maybe sometimes a little too much. I think my mom would probably have been classified as a helicopter parent if, you know, if she was being judged in my generation time frame as a mom, but definitely very involved. My brother grew up also being my best friend, and he and I have remained close throughout all these years. And to your point, we were really close up until about middle school. At middle school, I'd say kind of life started to change for me. My parents were definitely still very involved and there. It just became a point of trying to find out who I was. Growing up the way that I did with my parents and church and all of that, I felt like I spent most of my formative years being told who I was or what I was supposed to be and what it was supposed to look like. And coming in middle school, I really wanted to learn who Ren was for Ren's purposes, if that makes any sense out there. And so that took me down my own journey, and one that was filled with a lot of, let's say, trial and error.
Yeah.
Along the way of trying to discover what I wanted to be and why I wanted to be it.
Yeah. And that's a pretty normal thing at that age in middle school to start developing your own identity and wanting to have a little bit of differentiation from your parents and maybe push the limits or try on different ways of living. Mm-hmm. And so that makes sense that that's kind of where you were.
Yep. Yeah. And I wanted to be able to experience all of the things that I was told was taboo because I wanted to know for myself Why should I not do these things as opposed to just being told not to? Mm-hmm. I started to get into different groups of people. You know, I think I came up feeling very loved and belonging in my family, and even Amanda's mom, right, invested a ton in me. So I always knew I had a home and a place there. I had a safety net to kind of come home to. But I think that, I don't know, for me in middle school, it was really about understanding the world around me and how I belonged in this bigger picture. And as I started having those questions, I started to feel more and more detached from that bigger picture. And so I started searching for kind of not just meaning, but also like belonging. And so I started kind of branching out into different types of environments and people and experiences. And I found that I belonged very quickly in certain areas where, you know, there's maybe a party going on, right? And so everybody wants you to participate in what's happening at the party. And as soon as I did, man, I was the life of the party. Mm-hmm. And so that really gave me this sense of maybe like I've arrived.
found your people and you have something to offer and mm-hmm. people appreciate yes. it.
Yeah. And it started to feed this, this addiction, and this addiction, not always to the substance, but to that feeling, right? To the feeling that it created in me, that I'm the life of the party and I have something to offer. And as long as I continue to behave in this manner, then I'm going to continue to belong and be accepted and be invited to places and things like that.
So
that
feeling,
really started my journey. Huh?
So as a therapist, I'm always thinking through like, okay, what is the feeling? So mm-hmm. the circumstances that led to the feeling were like being accepted, being a part of something, being valued. What, like, if you had to think of a feeling word, what did that feel like?
Yeah, I think I want to take a step back. I left out a critical piece.
Okay. Yeah.
On our street, Amanda and I lived on, there was another girl on our street who we were also both very close with. She was like a sister to me. And when I was 12, she passed away suddenly. And of an enlarged heart. And it was absolutely devastating and crushing to me. And that's really where I started, like, what is this world around us? What does it mean? All of that, right? So it started that. So when you asked me about
my your worldview.
Yes. And so when you asked me about my feeling on the acceptance and finding the friendships and trying to fill that void, I'd say it also was about masking the pain. Mm-hmm. And so when I go back and I feel it, it was about feeling that good euphoric feeling of all of those things. But I think at the heart of it too was trying to numb some of the negative experience or the negative feeling that was just underlying, right?
Yeah.
When you're at a party and you're, you know, drinking and smoking and doing all those kinds of things for that moment in time, you're euphoric, you're happy.
Yeah.
You know,
euphoria, and so happy. There's the feeling. It's like mm-hmm. a brief, like relief from the pain, like a brief period of time where you have some relief.
Yeah. And then that need to continue to have that feeling starts to take over.
Yeah.
And so from middle school to high school, I continued to engage in that and try to kind of chase the numbing, but chase the euphoria too. Mm-hmm. Push it all down and just be this happy-go-lucky, you know, life of the party type of person. That was the goal. I would say that on that journey, though, it quickly went from this euphoric feeling of being life of the party to really negative and dark places.
Yeah.
You know, places where you're chasing the feeling again, but you're not actually you're not getting that feeling anymore. Mm-hmm. And you can chase as much as you want. I could chase as much as I wanted to. It just never actually was achieved any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so through that journey, go ahead.
So at that age, when you lost one of your closest friends, suddenly, did you have anyone who could kind of walk alongside you and in grief and help you figure out how to process that?
Great question. Looking back on it, I absolutely had those people. I had my parents who would have been there for me. I had my brother. I had people like Amanda. I had other people in my life I absolutely could have done that with. For me, it was such a devastating experience that shattered what I understood about God and what I understood about life and myself, that I isolated. And I pushed all of the people who had shown up for me consistently in my lifetime away, and decided, not really like cognitively, I guess, but decided that I'm going to go chase this other thing instead because it's easier.
Yeah.
It's faster. And I don't want those closest people in my life to view me any differently. I didn't want to damage the perception they had of me because mine was already damaged enough. And I didn't know what else to show them because I didn't know what that looked like.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When I was preparing for this podcast earlier, I came across a quote from Brené Brown, and it is, everyone has a story or a struggle that will break your heart. And if you're really paying attention, most people have a story that will bring us to our knees. Mm-hmm. And I think when that happened with our neighbor, I think I had a lot going on in my life, and I was not able to connect with that pain, but hearing you bring that up, I'm just like, I can see how you isolated for sure. But at the same time, you know, when people are going through things, we're so good at isolating and, you know, not really addressing what's really going on that some of us don't even really, we just think everything's okay, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. So. Well, and I think that for me, I got really good at masking and putting on masks. Who am I in this moment? And who am I supposed to be in this moment, right? And everything's supposed to be fine right now, so I've got that face on. Or I'm at home with my parents, so I'm going to have that face on. And I'm at school, so I'm going to have that one on. And so I just started living kind of all of these different separate lives. But I would say that my double life started taking over. And that was continuing to go further and deeper into trying to numb what was really going on deep inside and trying to chase that euphoric feeling that I just couldn't capture anymore. And I did that for a good 10 some odd years.
Yeah.
Until one day I woke up and I decided, actually, sorry, I'm getting a little emotional.
You're good.
I didn't expect that. I remember waking up one day, I was in my car, and I woke up and I thought to myself, you know, kind of bummed that I actually woke up this morning. There was a piece of me that kind of hoped I hadn't. And there was this moment where like this spark kind of lit inside of me that said, if that's the feeling that I have first thing and the first thought I have when I wake up in the morning, something's wrong and something's broken. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going to wake up in the morning, then I should actually try to live a life worth living.
Yeah.
And
I was just going to say, sometimes when people get to that point where death feels like relief in some respects, it's kind of like, well, what do I have to lose to just give this up and try something new?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why not? This isn't working.
Yep. And I really wish that that moment had been my turning point.
Yeah.
It was probably the beginning of it. It was
the beginning. When I go back and I look back in time, you know, we all have pivotal moments in our lives, right?
Yeah.
And I remember that one being one of them. But through my journey, I had connected myself to a lot of people and places and things. That weren't really ready to let me go. And I wasn't frankly ready to let them go either. They had become my safety net. And while incredibly unhealthy and damaging and, you know, abusive relationship type of things, it was what I had come to believe I deserved. And that to leave would mean that I was somehow turning my back on this other double life that I had invested so much time and energy into building and hiding.
Yeah.
And if I did that, I had to start this journey again of, but who am I really?
Yeah.
And that was really scary to kind of to think about, was I really had invested a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Into being this other person. You know, I had sacrificed friendships. I had sacrificed family. I had sacrificed to a certain degree my future. And I really believed that. And to make a conscious choice to step up and do something different than that meant I'm going to have to figure all of this out in a different way. And that seemed daunting. Mm-hmm. It also seemed scary because I don't even know what life like that could look like at that point. And that fear of the unknown kept me stuck for probably another year or two, frankly. Yeah. And just, but those, that first thought, that first spark would still continue to come back on, if this is living, it isn't really living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what does living mean? What does that look like? And so I remember one day I woke up from being probably passed out, but I woke up and I went downstairs to talk to my family. It was my mom and dad. My brother wasn't living at home at the time. And I just started saying words that I don't even remember, like, consciously thinking of them, but I was like, I need help. I need help. And they both just looked at me and were like, okay, what can I help you with? You know? And I was like, I need to go to treatment. I need to go rewire. I need to go, like, level set and start over. And so they helped me find a place, and drove me and kind of, you know, dropped me off. And I'd say that's really where the real work began. I had such a good experience there of just really, you know, when you start something, this double life so young, I think that there's a part of your growing up that is stunted. And so it was almost like going through adolescence all over again. Like,
How old were you at that point?
This last time, the time that I actually, like, chose to go, wanted to go, and made the conscious choice to go, I was 18.
Okay.
And, you know, it had been a long journey. I'd say, you know, looking back at the time, I had felt like it had been a lifetime of living this double life. And I guess at that point, it kind of is.
It had been like half your lifetime.
Your life. Looking back now, it's like, it was such a blip in the screen, you know? But I don't know that you can really see blips in the screen the same way until you have that time behind you, right?
For sure.
Everything seemed, at least to me in, like, middle school and high school, like, everything was life or death. It was forever. There was never, like, you know, and on the other side kind of thing, because I don't think you have that gift of time to really have that perspective.
I
just wanted to circle back to when you were talking about these relationships that you had formed in your teenage years and how you felt like if you were to remove yourself from the situation, you would basically be letting people down. And I could just so relate to what you said, because I remember in a very unhealthy relationship where I was, like, very much in love and, you know, willing to do all the terrible things that I would not have normally done. There was this loyalty factor that I never really thought that much about loyalty, but I remember in this community that loyalty was, like, a really big thing. And so I felt this, like, I just have to be loyal to this person. And if I'm loyal, like, I would be rewarded basically by being loved back. And so, you know, I just think it's important, you know, for people that are going through this journey to think about, you know, that loyalty factor, and then also remember, like, just because we feel like that in the moment doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's completely accurate, because really the loyalties should be to, you know, our families that love us and have always been there for us and, you know, that truly want what's best for us.
I love that you say that, because definitely felt that. And it was really hard. And it wasn't until coming to the other side, and probably about, honestly, 5 to 10 years later of building a, like, healthy, strong relationships that weren't bonded in sickness and trauma and other types of things like that, that I found that the loyalty that I absolutely gave freely in my adolescence was so tenuous at best, because it was always about proving that loyalty in some way, shape, or form, right? And looking back now on the relationships that I have today, I don't have to constantly prove anything to these people. You know, you can show up for people and invest in them and meet them where they're at, and you have that. And it isn't about, like, these acts of, you know, whatever it may end up being, to try to prove that to them. And so this idea I had in my head of like loyalty was actually such a sick and unhealthy connection to a really cool word, frankly.
Yeah.
It was more of a manipulation, right? Of
control,
circumstance or people and, you know, your own self-worth and character all the time. That's continued to perpetuate that sick cycle carousel.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And another thing that came up for me when you were talking is, you know, being in that really dark mindset that I've been in, and I think every human has been in at one point or another, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or none of the above, we've all been in dark places where it's hard for us to see what life could look like 10 years from now or 5 years from now or even 1 year from now. And so, you know, just bringing some awareness to the fact that life can look really, really dark, but even though we don't see it, you know, if we put forth the effort, like it will get better, things will work out, and they're going to actually work out way better than we could even hope for.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So after I went to treatment, I have to say, like, it was really good for me, especially to get that distance between the people, the places, the things, all of that, to really kind of come back. I was there for, well, I ended up moving to that city too, to stay, to create that distance. And so I lived there for about, I want to say 12 to 18 months. It was something like that. Time is kind of elusive. I don't know about you guys, but since 2020, the concept of time is gone.
For sure.
But it was about 12 months to 18 months. But I just remember the very first day that I woke up and I looked in the mirror and I liked what I saw. And I remember feeling this like this peace and this warmth of like, I just really like myself and I'm happy. And I couldn't remember how long it had been since I could say that. It had been so long. And, you know, looking back, I spent a lot of time in that first year, 18 months, with so much like pain and regret of I had a really great upbringing. I had amazing family that was always there for me. I had great friends who I pushed away. I had, on the surface, you know, everything that you could absolutely want and need. And I made a choice to hide and choose a different path for myself. And so I spent a lot of time like hating my choices from that, for that first year. And then in that moment, like I didn't hate myself for that anymore. I didn't regret it. I'm who I am today because of it. And I was in that moment. And it was interesting to see like this evolution of being able to acknowledge that I made choices that led me here. And now I don't have to hate myself for those choices because I know that I don't have to continue making them anymore.
Yeah.
And in the very beginning, I didn't, you know, you know it. Like, you know, just one day at a time, right? But one day at a time feels so inconsequential until all of a sudden those days at a time begin to mount up and you have, again, that gift of time and that perspective to say, but look at so much, like everything I've been able to do in this time period and find myself. I finally found her. She's pretty cool. I'm not gonna lie. And it was just such a God moment. Like it was just, I can't really explain the feeling. Like I'm trying to, because you asked me that feeling. What was that feeling earlier, Jane? Man, the only thing that comes to mind is peace.
That's just what I was thinking. Peace. It sounds like peace. Like it wasn't so much about looking for external validation. Mm-hmm. Once you were able to look in the mirror and say, I like this person. It's okay. It's okay that you made some choices that led to painful things. Mm-hmm. Now you are in a different place and they're pretty cool.
Yeah, I am. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And I think that we go through things like this for a reason. Like I know this is a weird way to look at it, but I call it, in my mind, in my heart, it's like a healthy brainwashing when you finally are able to believe that like you're not bad. and like things happen so that you have a story, and that at some points in your life, you know, there will be power in your struggle and that you'll be able to help other people. And I think, you know, for me at least, that's kind of when I took my power back, is when I realized, like, because I think I just thought like I was bad at my core. And then I don't know, I just one day someone told me, there's nothing wrong with you. And then I started to believe that, and then took it a step further and realized, like, you know, there's a reason why we went through the things that we went through. And that as long as we make the effort, that, you know, God will use it for a greater purpose.
Yeah. I mean, we fast forward 20 years. And man, I love my life. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't trade one aspect of my story. I mean, do I wish I didn't have all the scars? Sometimes, but I wouldn't trade them, because to your point, they made me who I am. They allow me to empathize and help other people in moments that I can. I feel like I'm a better mom because I know how to be. I know the good, the bad. I understand the feelings. I understand how to recognize those feelings, and to stand with somebody in them, even when they're uncomfortable and they hurt. But man, I also learned through those experiences a ton of grit, determination, resilience. I was in the dark days for all of the negative things, and when I was trying to find the peace and what it took to get it. And I don't know that that's something you can just teach somebody. Mm-hmm. I think that's life experience. And it serves me every day, because times get hard no matter where you are in life.
Yeah.
And I know beyond a shadow of a doubt in my mind, it's going to be okay, and we can get to the other side because I've done it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that.
Absolutely.
What's your life look like now? Like, what? Oh, man. Tell us about that.
Sure. So I am married to the love of my life. I live in Spokane, Washington with he and my two beautiful children. I have a very sassy 15-year-old daughter who gives me a run for my money, but she's so much fun. She's so creative and artistic and helps me view the world in a way that I couldn't on my own. We're wired too differently. And so it brings this whole other, you know, I guess, perspective to life that I just otherwise would have been naive to. And then I have my son who's 9, and he is adorable and spunky and super funny and makes my life very happy. I spend a lot of time doing Lego because that's my stress reliever these days. I have too many to count, but they're a lot of fun. I have a career that I love. I live 7 minutes from my brother and 7 minutes from my mom and dad. Nice. So I also have to say the gift of time is the ability to repair meaningful relationships.
For sure.
And I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I have a ton of friends. I'm not necessarily the life of the party anymore, but I've got a lot of close friends that I definitely invest in and invest in me. They're positive and healthy and encouraging. And it's something that's like, again, during that time in life, I didn't even know that existed.
Like close, so authentic, healthy connections.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, life is good. It's just, you know, there's definitely ups and downs, and there's good times and bad times. And I've been married to the love of my life for 13 years. And so not all 13 have been the honeymoon phase, but they've all been worth it. Yeah. And I'll say that grit and determination and resiliency is definitely been helpful in navigating some of those ups and downs in a marriage where it's not just you, it's you and someone else.
Yeah.
And so, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and good. I just feel led to say, you know, if there's a mom listening, you know, whose kid is struggling with addiction, you know, both Ren and my mom You know, they stood by our sides when we were doing things that they did not approve of. Mm-hmm. And I think there's, you know, a lot of power in, you know, just showing up for your kids no matter what's going on in their lives. And, you know, I just want to say, hang in there. If you're a mom or a dad that is, has a kiddo that is struggling right now.
Yeah. I'll say my mom, I mean, Amanda knows my mom, but my mom is definitely what she would call a prayer warrior. And I'm so thankful for it. She's also a no-nonsense kind of person. So I'll say when I was in my darkest places, she definitely was not enabling of those decisions that I was making, but always left a door open where I knew I could go home when I needed to and when I was ready to.
Yeah.
So when I was ready to come down and say I needed help, they were ready to help me. They weren't going to allow me or enable me to live in my sickness, but they were going to help me get healthy. And through that journey, they showed up. They showed up sometimes begrudgingly, and rightfully so. I had done a ton of damage. But they showed up, and they allowed that to be repaired. Which is something that I hope I can do if that were ever to be my story with my kids. Because we've all been through pain, and pain is hard to go back in and be vulnerable again, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I consider it such a gift that my family was willing to continue to be vulnerable with me after I'd given them so many reasons to not.
Well, I'm curious about the double life piece. Like, how good were you at hiding the one life?
For about 5 years, I was perfection, Jane.
Okay.
I'd say the last 5, not so much.
Yeah.
I still thought I was really good. Yeah. I still had to, you know, work 2 jobs and have some semblance of like showing up for family events and all that kind of stuff. But it definitely became harder and harder as I went on, you know. There's certain things you begin to be unable, or maybe it's just becoming lazy in your own double life that I couldn't hide anymore. So to the depths that I was, I don't know that they fully understood, but they definitely knew. They definitely knew. I mean, I was living on my own. I was doing my own thing and causing damage and havoc in my wake. That just couldn't be hidden.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a ton of energy to maintain a double life. And then if you're not in the best place, I mean, I guess people who are maintaining double lives aren't in the best place. Like, eventually that's going to fall apart, you know?
Yeah, it fell apart.
Yeah. And they were there for you when you were ready to give up that other part of your life.
Yes. Yeah. No, it came down in a crashing fire. I didn't go into that as much, but yeah, it wasn't pretty.
But something very beautiful came of all of it. And that's all that matters. I love, one of my favorite like Quitlet books is called We Are the Luckiest by Laura McCowan. And I say this to a lot of my recovery coaching clients that it may not feel like it, but I truly believe in my heart that we are the luckiest. Because we know that we have to work on ourselves. And the truth is, like, if you're human, then you need to work on yourself. We all do. Mm-hmm. And it's just a part of life. And people that have, you know, are on a recovery journey or have been through something like this, we know full and well that we have to continue to do self-work to improve ourselves. So that is why I consider us the luckiest.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's just an amazing opportunity to uncover our blind spots and be forced to look at those and work on them and find healing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I love the progress, not perfection thing. I have to remind myself of that all the time. I'm a perfectionist at heart. If I'm going to do anything, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to give it everything I've got and I'm going to master it. Right. And I've done that in every aspect of my life. And as I've gotten older in my 30s, I'm like, you know, it's just about progress. Yes. I don't have to perfect everything right now. It's a journey and it's meant to be enjoyed. And I'm allowed to enjoy this moment of liking myself, you know,
absolutely,
and then seeing the blind spot and going, I could definitely be better there. I'm going to focus on that one. I don't have to fix all of it right now.
Yeah.
And the goal is good enough. It doesn't have to be perfect, but just good enough.
Yes. Yeah. Good enough.
Absolutely. My favorite quote like that is to just play the tape forward. I feel like especially I haven't used like street drugs in, I don't know, close to 17 or 18 years. But in my alcohol-free journey over the past couple of years, the most powerful one quote for me is just to play the tape through. Because anytime I play the tape through, I know that I don't want to wake up tomorrow hungover. And so it's just very easy for me to, you know, realize like just play the tape through and, you know, we'll be all right.
Not worth the temporary pleasure or euphoria that you might experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Wren, we usually end the podcast with this one question, which is what advice would you give to the younger version of yourself?
I think, I don't know why that made me emotional. I think the one piece of advice that I would give my younger self, and I just tell her she's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, she's worth the hard work. She's worth exposing herself to her loved ones and allowing them to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. She's worth the effort. And she's worth like asking for help because she's worthy of the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good advice. I love that.
Yeah. Like nothing you can do would take away from the fact that you're worth it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we get in this all or nothing mindset of like, well, I've already gone this far and I can't go back and I've ruined this and this and this. And what's the point now?
Yep.
And I think like, it's so true. Like we just need to know that we're worth it and there's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
That would take that away.
Yeah. Like there isn't an earning of worthiness. And I can totally relate to the advice, Wren. But like we were born worthy. Like it is our birthright to be worthy of everything good and that this world has to offer. And so I think that is really beautiful advice.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today, Wren. I love you.
Thank you for having me. I love you too.
Wren, thank you. It was so nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for listening. We truly value each one of you. In support of the podcast, please follow or subscribe to the Mindful Sobriety Podcast.
We'd love to connect with you via Instagram at Jane W. Ballard and or DFW Yoga Girl. Sending you love and light.